All right. So I'm doing a series of classes on this book, Idiot's Guide to Zen Living, a book that I wrote a number of years ago. It is now out of print, which is kind of surprising. It was only published. That's it. I mean, time flies, right? But 2014. I don't know why it's out of print, but it's available, still available as a digital book. So you can get it as a Kindle book or a probably the other forms of ebooks as well. And it I am covering just the a certain section of it, just the part. Because the other aspects of the book, like teachings and practices and what have you, I talk about a lot in other classes and talks. But this, I'm covering part five, Living Zen. Right now, we're talking about Zen in relationships. Shoketsu, did you have a question?
I just had access to a second book. I bought one for my daughter as well as, so I may have a one to make available. So I'll bring it into the Zendo if I can wrestle it away from her. I don't know if she uses it or not.
All
That's
right.
all.
All right. So last week we started with Zen in relationships, and we decided to continue this discussion for another week because there was a lot more to talk about. So just to kind of briefly give you an overview of what I talked about last week was dead batteries. My amplifying speaker just went out. I can continue, but I'll let Jim get batteries. All right. So last week I talked about how relationships bring out the worst in us. I mean, they bring out the best as well, but they bring out the worst, and from the point of view of a Zen practice, this is a good thing. Relationships are by nature challenging. Might want to
Sure.
take me off of, yeah, just put it on gallery view until other people are asking questions. You know how to do that? Oh,
So you just want to
yeah, Val, yeah.
sorry.
Cool. Sorry, it's a little disjointed so far. Okay. Other people are usually not invested in our own self-serving delusions. We may have expectations slash rules for how we think people should act. We get into certain kinds of patterns and dances with people that we don't want to change. There's always issues with intimacy versus boundaries. Good job. Thank you. Questions of generosity. Our precepts, our moral guidelines, all have to do with relationship. And the closer we are, the more interdependent we are with people, the more challenging the relationships are. So last week I talked about relationships as koan. Can you
Oh,
put it?
you still don't want it
Yeah,
though?
I don't. Yeah,
Okay,
just keep
no.
it on gallery for the duration.
Okay, sorry.
Until people are asking
Got
questions.
it.
Yeah, you don't need to see my big face in the Zendo. Relationships is koan. So when we have a challenge in a relationship, to view it as a koan is to view it as an obstacle we can learn from. So when we engage relationships as practice, obviously what we're talking about is the challenging parts, right? When we engage relationships as practice, we're turning the mind of practice toward our relationships. It's not
it's not primarily about fixing the relationships. It's not primarily about that. I mean, if that happens, that is great. But it's not about like, all right, I'm going to use my Zen and I'll try to get this person to chill out, or I'm going to use my Zen and, you know, I'll communicate in a certain way and then I'll get this result, right? It's not, we're not applying Zen to try to improve our relationships. We are looking within, asking ourselves, if this other person never changes, what can I do to decrease the suffering in my own mind and heart? Completely independent of what the other person is doing. Now, a huge disclaimer and caveat here is that if we do this kind of practice with respect to our relationships, it says absolutely nothing about, it does not say in any way that we do not try to fix relationships or improve communication or draw boundaries or speak up for ourselves or anything. That all may happen. Maybe it should happen. That is fine. This is just a different, this is a different aspect of our relationship to relationships. So if the person, other person never changes, what can we do? How can we change the way that we think about this relationship, the expectations we have? Are there needs we're trying to get met in this relationship that maybe we could meet in other ways so we don't have to depend on this relationship for it, et cetera? What can we shift? And if we are in a, which we're going to talk about later today, certain kinds of relationships where you get into this dance with people, right? And parts of it may just be dysfunctional. You get into this dance, how can you change your part of the dance? You know, regardless of whether the other person changes. Because we are, that's the only thing we can do anything about, actually. And even that's not easy, right? Changing our own minds and hearts. But that is the one thing that we have an influence over. And as we do this, I think maybe that's all I'll say about that. Then last week we did have small groups where I asked people to share one useful thing a human relationship has taught you about your own behavior. So we had some interesting conversations about that. So then this week, I wanted to share in my Zen Living book, I have four statements. And I'm going to explain just a little bit about these four statements, but then we're going to take a few minutes in small groups. And I'm going to give each group one of these statements to just kind of wrestle with and chew on and try to find another way to express what is the truth of this statement. We can always think of exceptions, but in what sense is it helpful to think this way? So the first one is, no one makes you angry. So just a little caveat here, like you may agree with that, but then you may kind of then blame yourself for getting angry, right? Like, I should never get angry because no one makes me angry. So therefore, you just, you know, shouldn't have these feelings. And that's not really the point. Like, anger is going to arise, and that's, and it may, you know, somebody may do this thing and anger arises, right? It's not saying that there aren't correlations. It's not saying that anger doesn't arise, but that since no one makes you angry. So, Yeah, have one group or more than one group, probably a cloud group and a dirt sender group to talk about that. Like, what does that mean? Why would that be maybe a helpful framing to adopt? Why might that be a helpful way to think about your relationships? And again, you may think of exceptions, or you may think of certain circumstances where this is not a helpful thing to think, right? Maybe you don't stand up for yourself enough, right? And you might think, oh, he's not responsible for my anger. Like, sometimes anger is a healthy thing, right? So there's many situations where this might not be the right medicine. But hopefully in your groups, you can try to fish out what is helpful in this message, what is true. And the second one is, no one makes you happy. Now, again, this is you can make lots of exceptions, right? We have to have other human beings. We do have to have other human beings to be happy in a way, right? Like, we are dependent on each other. We're a social beings. But in what sense does no individual make you happy? The third one is, no one owes you anything. So this one, I can imagine some debates happening in these whatever groups end up discussing this one. In what sense does no one owe you anything, or how might it be helpful to think of it that way? Even if you are married to the person, even if this person is your child, even if this person is your parent, in what sense is it helpful not to think that they owe you anything? And what do we really mean by that, if somebody owes us something? And then the fourth one is, everyone is like you. So, looks like there's about 14 people. Jinryu.
Just a very quick question on that last one.
Yeah,
everyone is like you. Can you just elaborate a little bit?
Yeah, I think it's like, you know, everybody's fundamentally like you. Down deep, you know, maybe not superficially, maybe not in their opinions and their habits and their personality and whatever, but in some more deep way, they're like you. So Tyler, I think you can.
I've got four groups of three set up, if that's acceptable.
Four groups of three is great. Now, how do we assign them a topic?
So I've named the room. First room, no one makes you angry. Room number two is named. I my dog started losing it at the door, so I missed what room number two was, or what the second was. Must be a bear out there or something. She was going crazy.
No one makes you happy.
Thank you. That's group two, is no one makes you happy. And into that, group three was no one owes you anything. And then group four, I guess I'll just go back around to no one makes you angry. Is that acceptable?
It's everyone is like you.
Oh, yes. Sorry, that's group four. Oh, and right. And group five was just the cart and the dough on. Sorry, I have a fifth group, but that was just to move the cart and dough on aside. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you. And then we'll divvy up the groups in here. And you can go ahead and, you know, give a minute or two grace period and then give the groups 10 minutes.
Great.
All right.
I'll be joining one of the groups in a minute. So if you've got group two, I will be there, I promise. All right.
I should probably get the whole Dirt Zendo back and then close your breakout rooms. All right. So hopefully you had some interesting conversations. We don't have to do a complete like 8-group report back. I'll just kind of open it up and you know, if you feel like something interesting came up in your group, some interesting answer, we probably should talk about at least each of the things. So let's start with the no one makes you angry. So there must have been a dirt sender group and a cloud sender group who talked about this. And what did you think was the truth of it, Jinryu?
Well, you just asked a question that kind of blows what I was going to say, but I don't know that we got to the truth of it, but I think there was a lot of truth being spoken. And I just want to quote two things that Marv said, because I think he hit on some things that are very important to me. And Marv, I'm quoting you, so feel free if I jump in if I get it wrong. But one of them was the nature of the statement depends on two things. And the first thing is, what mood am I in? Because something could happen. And if I'm in a great space and everything's cool with me today, I might just let it roll on by. But if I'm in a dark space and things aren't working out for me today, and that very same thing happens, it can really make me angry, quote unquote. And so the point being that there's what happens, and then there's the story that you tell about it. And it's not the thing necessarily that is making me angry. It's the story I'm telling myself about it. And I feel that is a pretty fundamental truth. Another thing that Marv said, which I really love, I'm going to write this down somewhere and keep it. Oh. Anger, technically speaking, can only last 90 seconds. Having to do with the, I don't know what they are, running around in my brain, the dopamine levels, the cortisol levels, all that stuff. I don't know how to express it. Marv can. But if it can only last for 90 seconds, then as I let that go longer, then I'm the one who's making it go longer. So I really appreciated that. But we did have a very good discussion.
Yeah, I think it's useful to differentiate between that immediate response, which essentially anger is, we feel like something needs to be protected. Might be ourselves, might be someone else. We may realize we were wrong and we misunderstood the situation, but you know, initially we're like, you know, so it's just kind of what it is. It's kind of morally neutral in some ways, but then yeah, what do we do with it then? In some ways, when I think about so-and-so made me angry, you know, it's definitely like, it's not just a you know, in the moment, 90 second reaction, you know, it's definitely, it's the story later. And it's a kind of it includes a kind of personal affront, you know, that it's not just some behavior you did triggered some angry response in me, right? It feels much more personal than that. Like you. So how about the cloud group?
I'm in the cloud.
I mean, dirt cloud. How about the dirt group? Any? Do you want to come up here and do you have anything to add?
Let's see. So I just kind of had notes. There was the staying angry that Jinryu kind of mentioned that had come up for us. We had kind of notes about stepping back and looking at the situation as opposed to and seeing what our part in it was. We had a little discussion about running away from conflicts, and then anger and power could be getting linked together, where feeling powerless when you actually have options. But that could just be seeing the whole situation. So
thanks. Yeah. I think this phrase could be quite, as these other ones could probably be quite misused and misapplied in a sense, but kind of like Jinru is talking about this, so much of whether anger arises or lasts has to do with our own body and mind, right? It's like you can imagine these different scenarios where, you know, your significant other or your coworker said something what sounds kind of snide or insulting about your work, right? And like you can imagine an angry response. But if you are like babysitting a little kid, a little 5-year-old, and the little kid says, "I hate you." you just realize, like, okay, you know, bad day for the kid. It's not, you don't take it personally in the same way. I mean, you might, like, depends on the day, right? But you know.
It means you're telling them to do something they don't want to do.
Yeah, Erica says it means you're telling them you're to do something they don't want to do.
You can also see the adult that makes a hateful statement as acting like a child.
Exactly. I
often see adult as a child, and then I'm like, okay, there's acting childish, I don't care.
So more and more, as in practice, as we become more aware of our own stuff and at peace, like accepting ourselves and facing our own kind of deep internal doubts that other people will trigger, and we kind of know we're okay and we mean the best and we can apologize if we make a mistake and all right. Then when somebody comes at us, you know, we can like, oh, you know, I'm sorry I, you know, upset you. Sorry you see things that way. You know, it doesn't make us angry the same way. So it's not so much about like, no one makes us angry, so therefore you should be able to like wrestle or suppress any angry feelings that arise. It's just, we have a say over time in our practice. We can change ourselves gradually, so we respond and relate to all of this differently. So how about no one makes you happy? Should we start with the cloud again? Did no one make you happy in the cloud have a spokesperson?
Well, I was in that group. We didn't choose a spokesperson.
Oh, okay.
But I'll go for it. So we kind of talked about, I mean, we sort of between the three of us decided that it's a little bit like happiness is an inside job.
Mm, yeah.
But that seemed too simple. Mm. So we were talking about how, when you engage in a relationship with another person, you're more likely to have a positive experience if you go into that, you know, moment with a open mind and open heart, and you're more likely to have a happy, you know, interpreted as happy experience if you have mutual values and mutual respect. And probably mutual interests. Those are all kind of obvious things. But then we also talked about how it isn't really that person that's making you happy, because you can also be engaged with that exact same person and go into that moment with that person, just kind of closed off, like maybe like you were just talking about with your coworker, you know, maybe somebody who earlier you're kind of pissed off at, that, you know, that person doesn't even know that you're angry with them anymore, but you're still angry. And so you're not going to come away with a feeling satisfied because you're still enjoying being upset with that person or just still not over it yet. So part, I guess what I'm trying to say is it's not always just the engagement with a particular person, but it's your effort put into that and how you interpret it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dirk Zendo, do you have anything to add?
Add something without being a spokesperson?
Yeah.
So, yeah, as I've been sitting here and also when we're in groups. So with happiness, happiness comes in a lot of different flavors, right? So no one can make you happy. What does that mean? Like, are you talking about like, oh, this is the way I felt when I went to an amusement park when I was a kid or when I first fell in love? Or is this just like contentment or lack of any unpleasant sensation, right? And so I was thinking, oh, we got this hard one, happiness. But then I was thinking about it. Well, I'm like, well, anger has a lot of different flavors too, like resentment, envy, disappointment, regret. Mm. And I think it could be instructive to think about like all those different types of anger and types of happiness. Maybe there's some clarification that needs to be,
or maybe we make it even more general and we just say nobody's responsible for the negative emotions and experiences you have and nobody's responsible for the positive ones. So, and in that sense that like it's not saying that people don't have an effect on us and influence us, but I feel like ultimately what we're searching for in practice is to be able to find our own really deep inner, maybe happiness isn't the right word, but you know, peace, and yeah, peace is a good word. Ease, but joy too, like unconditional. So it's not dependent on any kind of relationship. It's not dependent on any kind of external experience. I mean, that's an ideal anyway, but that's kind of what we're working towards. So anything to add to from the group?
We couldn't figure it out.
They couldn't figure it out. Yeah, I think, you know, what we're at a very deep spiritual level, we're looking for a deeper source of peace and joy. And honestly, I mean, for most of us, relationships with humans or with other beings, if you rate all our joys in life, right, those are going to be up at the top. Like those are our primary central human joys. I remember there was a little plaque at the Zen Center that said, because the Buddha made this speech at our wedding, and he said, like, the most precious, I don't know, human joy is that which unites two human hearts. And the only thing that surpasses it is the taste of truth. So it's like, because as long as we are really dependent on our relationships, as wonderful and important as they are for our ultimate happiness, one, that's a very insecure place to be, right? Because we eventually lose everyone. And two, like,
been, there's always, those relationships are always kind of serving a need where, I don't know, if it, at a very deep level, you know you are okay and you do not need this person to be this certain way, to stay in this relationship, to act in a certain way so that you can get this happiness out of it, then you're much freer to interact in a truly loving way with these beings. In a truly open-handed way, you can say, you know, I love you more than anything and I really want you to be part of my life. That's but not like, you are the source of my happiness and you cannot, you know, you must not leave. So, and that way you're not doing much for my happiness when you act like that. So let's see, we only have a few minutes left. Once again, we're like, I don't know, should we talk about relationships for another week? How about No One Owes You Anything?
Hi, I'm hey. Eric, and Bob and Brian said I need to be the spokesperson. So we talked about, obviously No One Owes You Anything being like expectations, but then we decided to take it a little bit deeper and look at times when you kind of do have expectations, like when you ask someone to do something for you or you need someone to do something for you, or from like a parent to a child. And then a third one that we'll talk about, and I'll say in a minute. And what we kind of came to conclusion, I guess the third one was the lack of, so not being cynical, not turning into, you know, oh, I don't need, I can't expect anything from anyone. And so what we kind of came to conclusion is it's really about the attachment. And so, yes, you should try not to have expectations. When you do, when you've asked someone to do something, they let you down, it's releasing them rather than taking it personal and allowing that to turn into suffering for yourself so that you release them and that that's their obligation because they you understand that, yes, you asked them to do something. Yes, they let you down. Yes, you may learn something about them, but you don't take it personal. And then in the parent-child or relationship, like a more intimate relationship, it's again, yes, there's going to be hurt there, but the way you heal that hurt is by, again, releasing it and allowing yourself not to be attached to that expectation or that hurt. And then we also talked about how that to keep from being cynical, because being cynical would be being attaching to the loss and the lack of people being there for you. And so, again, non-attachment is the answer. And anything, no one owes you anything, keeps you from having to suffer from other people's reactions or responses. So that was kind of our kind of discussion.
Thank you. Well put. Any additions from the dirt?
I lost the rock, paper, scissors tournament. So we circled a little bit around the difficulty of what a parent owes a child or vice versa. And I think before sort of concluding that that wasn't the right place to apply this statement. And then we came back to relationships aren't really transactional, right? We do things in a relationship for the sake of the relationship because we want to. When we get frustrated that we don't get what we owe, we are owed, it's actually our frustration that we can't control the other person in the relationship. And it's that way that we participate in our relationships, but we don't possess them. And sometimes we want it to be the other way around.
Like it. Thank you. And it occurs to me, you know, when we use the term, you know, we're like, it means somehow I can compel you. I can bring the rule of law or something. I can compel you to fulfill this expectation, right? And it's so easy to, mean, it's especially difficult in our close relationships where, you know, we've built our lives around people. We're depending on them. What they do affects us very profoundly. Like, come on, like, don't they owe us honesty or respect, or like to be careful with our shared money, or to, you know, communicate their feelings instead of stomping around? Or, I mean, of course, there's all these things that we really would like, right? Like, it's important. But I don't know, like this adopting this point of view feels like a very profound respect for all people, whether that's a child or that's an intimate partner or whatever, to recognize like it's your life. Like, I am in relationship with you and I would like to ask this thing, but like, I can't compel you to say yes. I would like it if you said yes and if you treated me with respect, right? But I can't force that. Well, we only have 2 minutes. I don't know how far we're going to get on everyone likes you. Or is everyone likes you. I don't know. Be an interesting one to adopt. Everyone is like you. So anybody in the cloud want to say?
Yeah, sure. We had that one. And we thought that it's a nice statement to help us kind of decrease our judgments of other people, decrease our annoyance, increase a feeling of connection and compassion. And like Tyler said, everyone has their own karma and their own imperfections, and remembering that we also have our own imperfections. And sometimes the annoying thing or the thing that makes us angry about someone else is something that we actually do ourselves anyway. And Cassie kind of said, trying to remember that everybody is doing their best with what they have been given. And we've all been given very different things and very different situations. So everyone is like you was just about remembering that we're all people. We're not our behaviors. We're not our words. We're people, and to be compassionate about each other.
Thank you. Any additions from the dirt sender?
I'll go. Do I have time?
Yeah. Okay. Well, just, I mean, if anybody needs to take off, you can take off, but run a couple of minutes over.
So just to make it quick, there's really just 4 points here. I'll just go over the 4 points real quick. We started with that. For the most part, we all have a need to feel loved, to be accepted, to be happy, which brought up an interesting point about is our start, for example, and this is an example, sociopaths and psychopaths, were they an exception to that rule? Are they not? Were they abused? The reason why were they abused came up is even can a sociopath or a psychopath still fundamentally at the very core of themselves still have a need to feel loved? But then someone else brought up a really good point. People who are abused as children turn out really, really to be wonderfully, you know, wonderful people, good people. So, you know, is there a conundrum between those two aspects of socio, you know, were they abused? How did they turn out bad because of that? Or, you know, people still turn out good because they were abused. And then the fourth point was that we all have, I brought this one up, that we all have the potential for good or for ill.
Thank you. Yeah, I figured the whole sociopath question would come up whenever we were discussing this. And actually, I believe in my Zen Living book, I mention it. I don't think this has to be an effective framing for our relationship practice. I don't think it has to be naive. You know, there's still times when like actually that's not a good person to interact with. That is not helpful. As far as I can tell, as far as I know, you know, there is some tiny percentage of people who seem to be missing a few cards from their deck. And that empathy or that similar need for love or connection. I don't know. I mean, we don't know, right? We don't go around.
Anyway, no question, our group, we really don't know.
We really don't know.
Discussing.
I think what we can say is there are some people out there that apparently are like that.
Right.
And yet, you know, you look at it from another point of view and it's like, if the vast majority of people are like us, even if they, because this is what I think was one of the most healing things for me when I encountered Buddhism, was this idea that harmful action is, you know, always, and probably same in the case of people with unusual brains, is people wanting to be happy and going about it in all the wrong ways, right? It's delusion and selfishness and greed and what have you, but like they're just trying to be safe and happy.
Well, that's where the question came up. Do they still at the very core of themselves still have some need to feel loved and be happy?
Well, and maybe their happiness doesn't have to do with being loved. Who knows? But they're obviously they're still motivated in some way. So they may, you know, and so people may. And I really think this is borne out again and again in our experience. And I mean, I don't know. What is the show? What is the show with the gay guys who queer eye? They travel around and they like do home makeovers for people and they go to all kinds of different places. And they go to lots of places where like a bunch of flamboyantly queer guys do not fit in at all, right?
But queer eye for the straight guy.
Yeah. So they go in and like they've kind of they remake this guy's life. Part of it is fixing his house, and part of it is like
cooking.
Good part of it is helping him get in shape and dress nicer and all that stuff. And like, I mean, just time and time again, that silly show can just move me to tears because it's just people.
They're so happy though.
They're just like, they're just whatever kind of rough exterior, whatever kind of politics, whatever, wherever they're from, it's just like underneath, they're just people. So even if that's, you know, maybe 1% of the time, maybe that's not, then don't we just feel compassion for those people who don't have this? They don't have that desire for connection, which gives our life meaning. So, well, we only 5 minutes late. All right. We offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Parami. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you. Wait.